It's an anthology that includes more than 80 writers. The book gives us fresh insights on the Driftless region and the inhabitants and travelers who are won over by its beauty, its rugged terrain. This is a region that includes southwestern Wisconsin, Minnesota, Iowa, and Illinois. The new book is The Driftless Reader. The editors are here with us. Kurt Miney is a conservation biologist and writer affiliated with the Aldo Leopold Foundation, Center for Humans and Nature, and UW-Madison. Kurt, welcome to the program.
It's good to be here. Thank you.
And Keith Keeley is executive director of the Savannah Institute, working with farmers on sustainable agroecosystems in the upper Midwest. He's a native of the Kickapoo Valley. Keith, welcome. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having us.
Well, you two write so eloquently about what the Driftless area is to you. Can you first take us to this region and share why it is so special? Kurt?
Sure, I'll start. I came to Wisconsin originally to go to grad school, and I ended up working in and getting to know the Driftless area really well. And I've lived there for the last 25 years on the eastern edge near Spring Green. So over the years, it's just been a process of continual deepening of your understanding and appreciation of the history, people, landscape, and quality of existence in this really unusual region of the Midwest. And people who live there and people who visit or come from there, they get that. We get that. But this book gave us a chance to really focus in on trying to fill that picture out a little more with all the layers of history, literally in the book, as it's arranged from geology to native history to European exploration and settlement to current issues, and even the last section, which talks about the future of the Driftless. So this book has given me a chance to really put into between two book covers some of the things that I've encountered along that path.
Keith, why is the Driftless such a special place for you? What's the treasure in it?
Well, for me, it was a place where I spent my boyhood, playing in the creeks, as we call them, in the valleys there, and then growing up, it was a place I wanted to escape from, like a lot of people when they're in their teenage years, and then coming back as an adult, and then leaving and coming back again. I think that coming and going was part of my recognizing that this is a unique place in the world, and there isn't any other place quite like the Driftless. And so, when Kurt, who I got to know at the UW, started talking to me about a book about the Driftless, I immediately was interested and asked him if he wanted some help. And he was happy to have it. And we've had a great time putting this together. And I've learned so much that I never even understood about the place that I come from. And like Kurt mentioned, just how deep the history goes, and how the Driftless is not just one place either. It's many places put together that mean a lot of different things to a lot of different people.
And it's not just about glaciers.
In fact, it's not about glaciers at all.
Yeah, tell us how the glaciers factored into the terrain, the topography, and why this place is so beautiful, which can sometimes spur what people write about it.
Sure. Well, the glaciers missed us. They forgot about us. They never came to the Driftless. And so that's why we have these ridgetops that are hundreds of millions of years old. And the bedrock is just older as you go further down into the valley. And because the glaciers never came through and flattened the Driftless like they did a lot of the Midwest, it's a much older landscape that's been shaped by much older forces. The glaciers are pretty young relative to geologic history, which is hard to imagine, but that's what makes the Driftless an old place and a special place, is that the glaciers never erased it like they did a lot of the history in the rest of the Midwest.
Things that come to mind when I think of Driftless: rolling hills, wide open spaces, kind of you can breathe, you can think. Does that, Kurt, is that fodder for being able to write?
Well, it's certainly true that the difference in the topography of the Midwest compared to other surrounding areas of the Midwest have evoked a different chain, variations on the culture of the Midwest, let's put it that way. That includes the way we farm, the way we use the land, the way Native people inhabited the landscape before Europeans, and the way writers have come along. And that's actually the origin of this book, was literally looking at my bookshelf and saying, wow, look at that. There's Ben Logan. He wrote that wonderful book about the Driftless. Oh, Aldo Leopold. He worked in Coon Valley and wrote that wonderful essay. Mark Twain. Oh, he came up the Mississippi back in the 1880s.
Laura Ingalls Wilder.
Laura Ingalls, on and on and on. Frank Lloyd Wright. These are the well-known names. Mm-hmm. But part of the pleasure of this book was really going beyond the best-known names and really discovering in those hills and valleys special voices from so many different places and so many different styles. And once you started exploring, they just sort of started to emerge. And so the thing that unifies them all, however, is this relationship with this distinctive landscape.
Keith, how did you go about finding the voices who are not so well known, who aren't the Mark Twains, the loggers, the raftsmen, more of the laborers of the Driftless area?
Well, one of the really enjoyable parts of putting together this book was that Kurt and I took various trips across the Driftless and went and visited with folks that we had connections with or were just getting to know in Dubuque and in Decorah and in La Crosse and Platteville. And so that was part of getting to know the region more. And then there was also the fun part of digging into the archives at the Wisconsin Historical Society and getting suggestions from people when they heard that we were putting together this book. And so it was kind of a treasure hunt. and it really was surprising, some of the things that turned up. Like I say, I never imagined the Driftless had such a rich history.
If you're just joining us, we are talking to the editors of the new anthology, The Driftless Reader. And you can join in this discussion about the Driftless area, 800-642-1234. What is your story about the Driftless area? How has this region inspired you? Join in, 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Kurt, how did the authors that you selected for this reader, what were their aha moments about the Driftless area and what they gleaned from their surroundings?
Well, with 80 different voices, you can imagine everyone has a different story about how and why they felt moved. I think, let me just choose one, because he is a well-known and appreciated writer. That's Ben Logan, who is so beloved. And his book, The Land Remembers, is itself a classic book that people throughout the Driftless have really taken to heart, and beyond, well beyond. In fact, that book has had a national audience ever since it was published in the 70s. It's a great story of Ben, who grew up on this small ridgetop farm out near Gay's Mills, who then went away. He left the farm when he was in his teens, actually went to the university in Platteville and then Madison, where he studied journalism. He ended up in World War II in a pretty traumatic story of his service in Europe. And to make a long story short, he ended up returning to the Midwest only after he had a whole career in writing and advertising and so forth. And he was compelled in his 50s to write this memoir of growing up on this farm. He could not, as he said, I couldn't leave the land behind. The land remembers me, and I remember the land. And so he's living in New York when he's writing this. And you can really see him, how he's using that story to come to terms with his own life, with his experience as a boy, with his experience through his life, and then late in life trying to use his experience of the Driftless landscape to find his peace, really. And he does, and he eventually reacquires the family farm in his retirement years, moves back, and becomes a fixture again in the landscape that he grew up in. It's an amazing tale of a circle coming around.
Keith, what is it about going away, seeing other things that inform you and others about the Driftless area?
Yeah, it's funny hearing Kurt speak about this. Ben Logan, his farm is just down the valley from where I grew up. And so when I was reading Ben Logan's book for the first time, it really struck me. And he doesn't write about that process of going away, but it does have that perspective of recognizing how special the place is and what community means in a small town, and being connected with the seasons and the cycles of the land. That's something that I think that's a part of the Driftless, is the land is continually changing over millions of years, but also every day, every season. So I think that's a part of it too.
And you compile writings from different eras, which is really neat because the book goes from past to present to future, and it really pulls people from several centuries. Kurt, how does time period affect the writings about the Driftless area?
Great question. We organize the book roughly chronologically, starting with geology, actually, and then last section has to do with the future. And so the reader, I hope, goes through this book in the same way we did as editors, and having this wonderful experience of connecting across time, even as you're kind of lodged in a particular phase of that history. And so the reader, again, I hope, will find and see these connections, say, between Native American experience in the landscape with contemporary issues, or can see how water has been a dominant feature in shaping the landscape and the people all through its history. And so you have this interesting experience, at least we did as editors, of walking through time, but also finding those moments when your brain, your neurons go, look at that connection. Oh, wow, I didn't see that the first time I read that. And I didn't see it because that piece was not connected to this piece.
Could you see threads over time in their writing that you could draw from way long ago to present?
Yeah, we in our introduction, we identify several things, themes that you see resonating throughout all these voices over all these vast stretches of time. I'll just choose one of them. It's one that Keith mentioned, this tension between feeling at home and feeling comfortable in these rather confined valleys. People who know the Driftless know you feel at home, you tucked in these hills. At the same time, you can feel confined. And so there's this tension between feeling it again at home and comfortable, and at the same time sometimes feeling confined and the need to move beyond. There's another theme of people moving and coming and going, as Keith mentioned, of leaving and coming together, or concentrating in towns or being out on the landscape. That's not just a modern experience with, say, the changing farming landscape and economy. That goes back millennia to the different ways that Native people lived and inhabited in the Driftless, coming together in communities and villages versus being out on the landscape at different periods in archaeological history.
Keeley, were you surprised how you could make these connections from voices from so long ago versus voices today about what they were saying in their writing, in what they produced?
Yeah, one of my favorite pieces that exemplified that was we got to know Truman Lowe, who's a well-known artist and sculptor based here in Madison, but grew up as a boy in Black River Falls. And we have a photograph in the book of one of his well-known sculptures, which is it's a sculpture of the shape of a bird effigy, or the form of a bird effigy. And it was commissioned to go on the White House lawn during the Clinton era, and it was a connection of he was part of the Thunderbird clan, and so it represented that tradition of going millennia back to the effigy mounds that we see throughout the Driftless, but being represented in a modern way with a sculpture made out of aluminum and put in a very prominent place, the White House lawn, of course, symbolic for the representation of how that modern nation that we live in is interfacing with the tribal nation that's still a very vibrant part of the Driftless. And so that's just one thread that shows how these connections throughout history continue to have voice. And that's been one of the great things about this book, is bringing those voices together and seeing how they can speak to each other.
The Driftless popping up on our landscape across the country. We're exploring this new anthology from University of Wisconsin Press. It's called The Driftless Reader. There are more than 80 writers whose works are represented in the book. You've got Blackhawk, Laura Ingalls Wilder, Frank Lloyd Wright, Aldo Leopold. The list goes on and on. And then there are these less famous voices of raftsmen, of soldiers, loggers, explorers. The editors of The Driftless Access Reader are here with us, Kurt Miney and Keith Keeley. Kurt is a conservation biologist and writer affiliated with the Aldo Leopold Foundation Center for Humans and Nature in UW-Madison. And we also have Keith, who heads up the Savannah Institute based here in Madison, working with farmers on sustainable agroecosystems in the upper Midwest. Join in with your reflections on the Driftless Region, 800-642-1234. Why do you think the Driftless Region has its own unique history? What's the most important piece of it? What do you think of when someone talks with you about the Driftless area? We'll be back in just a moment here on the Ideas Network. It's a compilation of essays, poetry, more than 300 pages about the natural and cultural history of the Upper Midwest region, untouched by glaciers, by the way. The book features the work of famous names who we know. Think Henry David Thoreau, Mark Twain, Laura Ingalls Wilder, and also lesser-known writers who all penned their observations of the Driftless area. The anthology is titled The Driftless Reader. Its editors stay with us. Kurt Miney is a conservation biologist and writer affiliated with the Aldo Leopold Foundation Center for Humans and Nature and UW-Madison. And Keith Keeley is head of the Savannah Institute, working with farmers on sustainable agroecosystems in the upper Midwest. Join in with your reflections on the Driftless, 800-642-1234. Have you written about the Driftless region? What did you write about? Or maybe you find space to think at a quiet spot in the area and write about something completely different. Share your story, 800-642-1234, or share with us on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Let's go to Sandra right now in DeSoto. Hi, Sandra.
Hi. I'm so excited about hearing your program this morning.
Yeah, go ahead.
I live in the Driftless area. I live a little bit beyond DeSoto, which is exactly halfway between Prairie du Chien and La Crosse. And as I'm driving down that highway this morning and listening to your program and thinking, you are absolutely right. It is the most beautiful place that one could ever want to live in.
Sandra, how did you find yourself living in the Driftless?
We bought land way back in 1999 and then recently built a house on it for retirement. And we found it because we were driving down Highway 35, and my husband and I kept looking at each other and saying, how do you get land here? What, you know, how do people live here? And so over the many years, we have built a house, and we live way back in a little coulee, and it's rich in history. Keith Blackhawk, was in this area. Unfortunately, our history is not so nice about what we did, but it is just so rich in history and culture of the Blackhawk tribe.
Keith, could you touch on Blackhawk?
Yeah, the trail that Blackhawk took with his band through the Driftless is one of the tragic notes of history, and he was pursued by a band of militia, and ultimately many of his band perished at the hands of those soldiers and of other tribes as they tried to cross the Mississippi right near DeSoto, where Sandra's calling from. I'm really glad that Blackhawk, we have part of his autobiography in the book, and so we have it from his voice, just what happened. And that raises a point that although the Driftless is beautiful and there's lots of wonderful things to write about it, the book is not all smiles and rainbows. You know, there's difficult parts of living in the Driftless as well, and have been throughout history. One contemporary piece that speaks to that is Bob Wolfe writes about about Postville, Iowa, where there was an ICE raid that removed many immigrant workers from a meatpacking plant there, and the challenges that raised for a small town grappling with that. So we have that in the book as well. I mean, we tried to paint as varied a portrait as we could by bringing together voices that showed all aspects of the Driftless.
Sandra, thank you so much for calling in. Let's go to Nick now in Milwaukee. Hi, Nick.
Hi, morning.
Good morning.
Yeah, I was really fascinated by a really cool book I read. I don't live in the Driftless area, but I drive through it from time to time. And it is inspiring. The Cahokian Indian Mounds with the pyramid-style Indian Mounds is really interesting. But I had the book went into this detail of this struggle between this town, I believe Tremplo, and this archaeological situation where it was bringing in a lot of tourism and stuff, but the town ended up building like a water tower directly on top of the pyramid-style Indian Mound. I was like, I mean, I know it's sad and all, but it's kind of like what you said. It's kind of a little bit of both. The history isn't always so pretty.
Kurt, could you respond to Nick?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. No, Nick, you're exactly right. That as Keith said, there's a lot of tensions in experiencing this landscape contemporarily as well as historically. And it's interesting that you brought up that particular situation in Tremplo. We, in fact, include in the book a selection from a book by Laurie McMillan, a contemporary scholar. The book is called Buried Indians, Digging Up the Past in a Midwestern Town, and in fact deals exactly with the mound issue at Tremplo. She's a native. She grew up there and, again, is able to both write from within as a daughter of the Driftless, if you will, but also as a contemporary scholar looking to see what meaning we can extract from these tensions that we all experience in different ways in different parts of the, in, not only in the Driftless, of course, but beyond.
And what about mounds, Keith? You know, mounds are effigy mounds in the Driftless, and we have these burial sites in the Driftless.
Yeah, well, and I can't speak to this from any place of you know, I'm not a tribal member, and for tribal members, I think the mounds have special significance in terms of how they relate to this place and consider it home. But we understand from an archaeological point of view that not all mounds are burial mounds, but they all hold special significance for people in this place going back 1,000 years, and what we have in the Driftless with these effigy mounds is really an international treasure, because this concentration of effigy mounds doesn't exist anywhere else in the world. And if you've never been in a place where they have these mounds, the Effigy Mounds National Monument is a great place. There's lots of places, though. They're throughout the Driftless, and it really does bring you to a place of reverence when you take in one of these mounds that spans pretty large areas and have beautiful forms.
Keith, thanks so much for that. And Nick, thanks for your call. The book has chapters, and you begin with the geologic origins. The first piece is this poem from the late Patricia Monahan. It's 9 stanzas long. And Kurt, can you read just a bit of this poem to give us a sense of place?
I would be honored to do that. I'll just read the first 3 and then the last stanza. It starts the book, and a little background here is that I knew Patricia. She was a friend of mine, and she and her husband, Michael McDermott, started a group called the Black Earth Institute that encourages writers from all over, but it's based in Black Earth in the Driftless. Patricia had a deep appreciation of that place and of the Driftless landscape, and she did pass away in 2013, and I got to thinking about her as a friend and a poet. And I asked Michael if he could recommend a poem, and actually I found this before he could respond, and I said, I found it. And here is actually the first reading in the book, and I love how this kicks off the whole collection. Start with ocean, a shallow sea populous with plankton and giant fish that feed on it. Let storms and sunlight flash across the sea as bodies die. Let them drift down to mud. Then let there be light and fire and heaving rock on rock. Let the sea sink. Let it pour away into other younger seas. Let the land rest, damp, exhausted, rich. Now let ice appear from north and east and west. Let it move south to form an isle of green in the sea of snow. Let this happen over and over for 500,000 years. So that's the creation of the Driftless. And then she ends the poem this way. Let black soil deepen over limestone seabed, except where it erupts on crowns of hills. Then, not long ago, let people come. Start with ocean. End with black earth.
I can see why you would start with her poem. It really sets us up for how this land formed.
Right. I mean, the beauty of this is all the other readings in that section are geological, you know, accounts. Fairly, we might say, dry, no pun intended, accounts of the geology of the Driftless. And we end and finish the section with poetry. And we do that actually throughout the book. And I love that juxtaposition of the science and the literature and the evocative lyrical voices and how they play off of each other. And I don't know, it just happened that way. It really came together.
Poetry seems to be a natural fit for the Driftless.
It was, Keith will tell this, I'd call him or write him an email, usually it very early in the morning or late at night, say, oh, Keith, read this one.
Is that right, Keith?
Yeah, it's great.
One of the great joys of this book was really discovering poetry about the Driftless. Again, historical voices, but a number of contemporary poets who were also included.
Contemporary poets included. Who were these favorite contemporary poets who spoke, who wrote fondly about the Driftless?
Oh, we have a couple dozen in the book, and I'm almost reluctant because I don't want to leave anyone out. But I'll mention one. In fact, Fabu is a former poet laureate here in Madison. And I heard her recite this poem 15 years ago, and it stuck with me. Fabu wrote a poem about an early African-American settler who ended up in the Cheyenne Valley at the north end of the Kickapoo Valley. It's a story that is not unique. There are other African-American communities in the Driftless, but it's one that's pretty well at least recognized. And she wrote this poem about Micaiah Revels, who came through Madison in the 1850s, if I remember correctly, and ended up camping along a stream. And so I remembered this poem from my memory banks, and I said, oh, we're doing a collection of about water in this book, too. Maybe I could use that one. And Fabu, by the way, we're going to do an event at the Wisconsin Book Festival on November 5th, and I'm hoping that Fabu will be able to join us and read that. But there are many others. Poets, Ken McCullough, the poet laureate of Winona, Minnesota, who contributed. I shouldn't say contributed. We kind of drafted these people without their knowing. We just kind of said, oh, guess what? You're in a book. In fact, we're going to do another event this Saturday at the Guard Theater in Spring Green, and we'll have a couple of the poets with us there. Alice D'Alessio from here in Middleton, Wisconsin, is going to be joining us. She wrote a poem about the lead mining history of the Driftless.
And lead mining, also a topic that we can get into, Keith. But before we do, let's take another call. Stephen in Waniwak. Go ahead, Stephen.
Yes, I live in Waniwak I feel like it's an overlooked area of the Driftless, and it's a very interesting place. In fact, we have an author who wrote a book called Driftless, David Rhodes, who lives in Waniwak. And also, it has a very interesting history because on top of the hill on which the town is built is the Waniwak Spiritualist Camp, which has been here since, I think, since the late 19th century, and is still in operation in June, July, and August. And it's a very beautiful grounds and very interesting place to visit. And also, the Baraboo River and runs through, and we have beautiful geological formations. And it's a wonderful little town, and I always feel like we sort of get left out. Mm-hmm. So I really love it here. I've only been living here full-time 3 years, but have been in the area for the last 11 years.
Well, Stephen, thank you so much for calling in. And Kurt or Keith, how would you respond?
Feeling
left out.
I can't resist. I know Waniwak. I've been through there many times, and I agree. It's one of the prettiest parts of the Driftless in Juneau County. But we include in the book a short section on native place names. So everybody hears the name Waniwak. Where does that come from? So I just opened our book, and it says, the name and village, name of the village and town of Wanawak is a derivation from the Ojibwa. Wanawag, pronounced Wanawag, signifying, quote, they howl, wolves. So there are a lot of names in on the land in the Driftless that do come from native sources, and so we have a little section that includes that. So Stephen, we'll look forward to seeing you in Wanawak. And I love that story about the spiritual camp. Keith and I, our greatest fear for this book has always been, oh, we're going to leave something really good out because we can't cover everything. There's many more stories to be told.
Keith, and you must have learned, even though you grew up in the region, you probably learned a whole lot about your stomping grounds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I, you know, Stephen brought up David Rhodes, and Stephen, let me say welcome to the Driftless. and that was reading David Rhodes. Actually, I felt like I got to know some of my Amish neighbors in a new way. I grew up with Amish folks all around, but not always a lot of intersection between communities that might live right next to each other in the Driftless, and I think that's common in a lot of places. And David Rhodes has this wonderful chapter that we included about a kind of old-timer farmer who needs to get some work done on his old farmhouse and his anxieties about working with Amish neighbors to do that work on his farmhouse. And it's beautifully written and really gets at this these anxieties of how do we get to know these neighbors who in some ways are so familiar because we see them all the time, but in other ways can seem strange to us. And the really key moment of that is when Rusty, this old farmer, steps into the Amish farmhouse and has this flashback to his own childhood smelling the kerosene lamps. And that wasn't my experience, but that's the beautiful thing about literature, right, is that you can inhabit someone else's experience. And so that for me was a way for me to get to know my Amish neighbors, oddly enough, through David Rhodes writing about them.
Mm. And so what do we learn about the relationship then with the Amish neighbors? How does that relationship evolve?
Well, you have to read it and find out.
Oh, come on, Keith.
It's interesting. Well, there's a reason that the Amish communities have come into the Driftless in the last couple generations. It is because of the topography, in part, that parcels are smaller. Land is not as expensive as it is in flatter and some would say more productive parts of the agricultural Midwest. And so the scale fits the type of farming. We think of it as traditional. It's not traditional for the Amish. It's the way they do things. It's their way of farming and being. And so the Amish have found in certain corners of the Driftless a place where they can continue to practice their way of living and living on the land in the way that they always have. And yeah, sure, there's tensions and it means adjustment, but that's, again, part of the story.
Together, the editors assembled a mosaic of sorts to draw out the observations that writers have made of the Driftless area over time. It's a region that spans southwestern Wisconsin, southeastern Minnesota, northwestern Illinois, and northeastern Iowa. The anthology is titled The Driftless Reader. Editors Kurt Miney and Keith Keeley stay with us. You can join in this conversation about the Driftless, 800-642-1234. What is your favorite place in the Driftless area? Which authors best captures the essence of this particular landscape? Why do you treasure the Driftless? 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll be back in just a moment for more perspectives on the Driftless here on the Ideas Network. The goal of the editors was to give readers a deeper appreciation for the broad range of populations that have lived in the Driftless area. The Driftless Reader includes passages penned by more than 80 writers ranging from Native Americans to French explorers to Norwegian farmers. We're learning about the new anthology with Kurt Meine and Keith Keeley, who join us on the morning show. Kurt Meine is a conservation biologist and writer affiliated with the Aldo Leopold Foundation, Center for Humans and Nature, and UW-Madison. Keith Keeley is executive director of the Savannah Institute, working with farmers on sustainable agroecosystems in the upper Midwest. Join in, 800-642-1234. What do you think of when someone talks about the Driftless area? How has the Driftless influenced your life, where you are today? 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We have Jim from Middleton who says, does the book address the railroad tunnels that were unique to Wisconsin and northern Illinois because of its geology? Keith, what do we know?
Well, I was fascinated to learn about the railroads in the Driftless. This is something that I didn't recognize, that at 100 years ago or so, there were passenger rail services that connected all these little towns throughout the Driftless. And we don't have anything about the tunnels in particular, but I did learn in the course of that about one particular tunnel in the Kickapoo Valley, where I'm from, that was between Viola and Lafarge. And now it's a cutout in the Highway 131 between those two towns. But it was a railroad tunnel originally, it's because we have the hills and the valleys, of course, here in the Driftless, that those railroad tunnels were built to get from one side of the hill to the other.
Let's bring in Sue in Hartford. Go ahead, Sue.
Hello. I'm just calling to say that my family is from the Driftless area, the little unincorporated town of Barnum. Hills and valleys are just beautiful there, and I guess it's a spot that I often think, is it in my genes? It's certainly in my soul. It's so beautiful.
Mm. Yeah, Barnum is just down the road from Ben Logan's Seldom Seen Farm.
Yes, I've been to Ben's farm. I was good friends with him. And I also wanted to say, to segue into the neighbor's comment, that I remember Ben saying to me, people don't sit on front porches anymore and visit with neighbors, you know, who are walking by. And then he'd say, and tell their stories. They don't tell their stories to each other anymore. Mm-hmm. And he seemed to think that was a sad thing in our environment, in our lives today.
Sue, thank you so much for that. This is a book all about telling stories, and that's so poignant that Sue brings that out. Kurt?
Well, yeah, Ben, I knew Ben a little bit too in his later years and had a chance to work. In fact, I should mention the University of Wisconsin Press has also reissued his book, The Land Remembers, and I was honored, in fact, invited to prepare a new introduction for that book. This is what drove Ben. We talked about him before, but in his return to the landscape, partly it's a return to his own childhood and his own experience and trying to find the way to tell his story. And that's what we find in so many of these writers, and I shouldn't say just the ones in the book, there are of course many others, and it's what we all do. It's what we all do when we talk about our relationship to land and community and our thoughts about the future, is we tell our stories. And for some reason, and this is, you know, partly the landscape itself, the Driftless has had a particular wealth. But I really want to add very quickly, Keith and I say in the introduction, it's not just about the Driftless. Any place has stories. Every place has stories, and every place deserves its own reader, because the land carries those stories. And in this modern age, when things are moving quickly and technology, you know, accelerates our lives, that human need, desire to sit, be quiet, listen, tell our stories, find the meanings. We tried to provide in this book a model that maybe other would inspire others in other places, all across the landscape, not just in Wisconsin, but obviously anywhere, to bring that human need back to the foreground, to sit with another human being and tell a good story.
Mm. Sue, thank you so much for that. And let's go to Bill now in Madison. Hi, Bill. Go ahead.
Hi. Well, I have a story. So I'm from Washington, D.C., and in the 1970s, I was going to go out and see the Redwoods in California. And I figured I could get there in 2 days if I just took the interstate the entire way. So the first day, I made it to this place called Toma. There's a rest stop on Interstate 90, and I just crashed there. And the next morning, I got up and got some coffee and looked around and said, man, this is pretty. So I just took the smallest roads I could find, and I figured I'll get back to the interstate sooner or later. And I popped up on this hill, and I looked down at the Mississippi, and the sun was behind me, and I was looking down at La Crosse, and it was the most beautiful thing I had ever seen. I had been driving through these gorgeous little valleys, and I popped up on this hill and looked down. And a few years later, I'm working at Glacier National Park, and I meet this fantastic woman. And we've been married now for 35 years, and she's happened to be working at Glacier National Park, too. She's from La Crosse.
So now, Bill, you see the beauty of La Crosse probably more regularly than just being a passing through.
When we go back to visit, we never take the interstate. We always go the smallest little roads we can find. Yeah. And I've been here now, like I said, for 35 years, and I just think it is, I think, the most beautiful place I've ever seen. And I've been around a lot of places.
Mm. The thing that comes into my mind when Bill, you tell your story is something we actually had to leave out of the Driftless Reader.
I thought of this too, yeah.
He was chuckling. We had to cut back our word length a little bit, and so we had to pare off a few things. One of the things we had to leave out of the Driftless Reader was a little passage by John Steinbeck. So, you know, we don't think of John Steinbeck as have anything to do with the Driftless, but in his wonderful travel book, Travels with Charlie, he has a short little couple paragraphs about coming into Wisconsin and the Driftless for the first time, in fact, taking exactly the same road up through Toma and then heading west to La Crosse, in which he evokes that same exact sense of wow. And he was traveling, actually, and it was like this time of year, and the light at this time of year has a particular quality to it for those who know the Driftless. And he captured that. So for all those writers who couldn't make it into the Driftless and all the stories we couldn't include, you're in good company with John Steinbeck.
Bill, thank you so much for your story and so well told. Let's go to Bob now in Richland Center. Hi, Bob. Go ahead.
Hi, thank you. You have a chapter in the book about entitled Richland Center, the Cradle of Suffrage in Wisconsin, how earliest enthusiasts led sisters. And Richland Center was very, very progressive in the late 19th century and into the 20th century, I believe early 20th century for sure. But the women's club in Richland Center was very strong here well into the latter part of the 20th century. They had a room in the auditorium here that was exclusively for their use. And the auditorium is the first municipal auditorium in the state. And so they were part of a strong part of Richland Center. I'd like your comments.
Yeah. That selection shows up in a section toward the end of the book that we call Communities in Transition. Of course, every community is always in transition. But we wanted to highlight the fact of, you know, contemporary changes in the Driftless communities. But we also wanted to make a point that this didn't start, you know, at any point, actually. It's a continual. And so that opens up the section and says, yes, in fact, Richland Center and surrounding communities were the heart of the suffragist movement more than 100 years ago, back into the 1800s. And so we include actually a it's actually a newspaper article by a young student at the time. Her name is Mary Elizabeth Husong. She was a student here at the UW-Madison. And I don't know the story behind the story, but she ended up writing an account of the early suffragist movement based in Richland Center, and it became the hub for the statewide movement at the time.
Mm. Well, Bob, thank you so much for bringing that out. We have time for one more call. Renata in Lake Mills. Go ahead, Renata.
Good morning, and thank you. I wanted to bring up one of my favorite places in the Driftless area, being Trempealeau County. I have many fond memories of spending time with family on family farms and fishing in trout streams and just the beauty in all the different seasons. Being in Trempealeau County is wonderful. And my hopes and prayers at this point right now is that we can preserve that beauty and that frac sand mining does not destroy significant portions of it. And thank you so much for having this program. Mm.
Thanks, Renata. Keith, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, Renata. I think that farms and fishing and the beauty of the place and the community that we share it with is something we all treasure about the Driftless. And with regards to frac sand mining, it's a rather recent development in the Driftless, but we did find actually a song about frac sand mining written by a man who grew up in that area around Trempealeau, Emmett Doyle. And so the lyrics to his frac sand song are a part of the book and express, I think, some of the sentiments that a lot of us who treasure the place feel about what frac sand mining is doing to the place.
Keith, how has this book changed you, putting this book together? How has it changed you?
Well, I guess it's richened and deepened my connection with the place and the people that call the place home. And, you know, I think for many of us in our personal stories, there's nothing that we treasure more than the communities that we're a part of and the places of those communities. And so that it's deepened my appreciation for that, for sure.
Kurt Miney, same to you.
Give me a minute to think about it. It's still changing me every day as you think about, again, your relationship with land. But I will say that this book, for me, was a project that I took on at first with myself, but then Keith came aboard, thank goodness. And it was really for me taking a little refuge from a lot of the situation we find ourselves in. A lot of us are feeling unsettled, and I don't mean that in a partisan way at all. I mean that we all recognize that we're in a new reality. And by returning to our landscapes, by looking to our land, our history, the difficult stories as well as the joyful stories, the pain and the pleasure, maybe that can help ground us in these times of rapid change. And that's rapid ecological and environmental change. It's rapid social, technological, political change. And just feeling a little more grounded in the place you are helps us to navigate, perhaps, or perhaps helps us to hold tight. And it plays on the word driftless, of course. This was an area that we think of as changeless because it wasn't affected by the glaciers, but in fact, it changes all the time, as do we all.
Well, Kurt and Keith, thank you for coming by.
Thank you for having us, Kate.
That's a pleasure. Thanks.
That was Kurt Miney and Keith Keeley, the editors of the Driftless Reader that is out by the University of Wisconsin Press. And they're on a tour, by the way. The next stop is Baraboo on Friday. More events happen around Wisconsin throughout November and December. This hour of the morning show was produced by Keely Baltina and Nyasia Ellison. Michelle Johnson is executive producer and provided technical direction this hour. I'm Kate Archer Kent, and we've been learning about the Driftless area right here on the Ideas Network. Thanks for listening.